Blog Talk Radio.
On October 30, 1990, a young woman by the name of Cynthia Lorraine Ricketts Richardson was executed and dismembered by her husband, Donald Glenn Richardson. Her body parts were scattered over a 50-mile area in and around the Columbia River in the state of Oregon. As if the abuse Cindy suffered at the hands of her husband wasn't enough, the state of Oregon delivered its own brand of injustice to not only Cindy and her family, but to a second family as well. That is, when Donald was released from prison after only a 25-year sentence for his heinous crime against his wife. When Donald was released due to a new law that had been passed by the state legislature, he committed a crime so horrible it should have earned him the death penalty. Sadly, he will be released from prison in 2023. The family has fought for years to keep him in prison even before he was released the first time. This is Cindy's story. This is finally the justice she nor her family ever received at the hands of the criminal justice system in Oregon, from the attorney general down to the psychiatrist who stated that he was not a danger to others. While he was awaiting trial for Cindy's murder, his defense attorney stated in court that it was just a garden variety murder. Now Cindy can rest and her family can find the peace that has eluded them for so many years. Justice for Cindy by Yvonne Mason, available today on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Saturday night, and this is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason. That was a shameless plug for my latest true crime called Justice for Cindy by my admin, Christopher Dunham. And I have to tell you, that book was very painful to write because she was a victim of domestic violence. And sadly, she was also murdered due to domestic violence. My guest tonight, for whatever reason, was not able to appear, so I brought in my backup, Mr. Christopher Plain. How are you?
How are you?
I'm fine. You don't sound very happy.
Oh, I'm fine. There's just a lot going on, man.
Well, you know, there's always tomorrow.
Oh, I know. The wonderful world of the IRS happened to rape us for around $11,000, we found out, so.
Holy moly.
Yeah, so yesterday was not a good day, let's say.
Oh, bless your heart. So they just decided
the music God
they
was
wanted,
on a rampage.
They wanted their share of the pie plus yours?
Oh, yeah, they, you know. We had a couple things outstanding, I guess, that we knew about, but they hadn't really said anything for the past 4 or 5 years. And apparently, much like every government thing, you know, it takes forever for them to get to it. But they finally got to it, and they took their money.
So. Oh, honey, I'm so sorry.
And it is what it is. I mean, you know, just come at a bad time, but whatever, you know, it happens, and you just got to move on and whatnot. And, you know, it just kind of shook everything up yesterday because it put all my plans in a big, giant disarray.
Cesspool.
And
a big,
like
giant
cesspool. So.
Well, now, you know, you could go get you one of those IRS tax lawyers and fight that, I'm sure.
I don't know. It just seems at this point it would be, you know, I don't have the time nor the inclination, I think, really to spend even more money trying to fight an entity that has limited money and time to fight back. So.
Well, and that's true. And I can get on my soapbox about the IRS because they waste so much money. And the people that should be fired are not fired. And they're idiots. Let's see who else we got here. Hold on a minute. Hello, this is Yvonne.
Hello, Yvonne. This is Dr. Gibson.
Hey, Dr. Gibson. How are you?
I am
you
fine.
Did get
I
to
don't
call.
Know what
you...
happened. I
but
just
you
saw on your post that I think there was one digit off. I just saw on your post and that it was no show. I said no. It was one digit off, so I called the number.
Oh, bless you. Well, we have a co-host tonight, Mr. Christopher Plain. He's going to co-host with us tonight. I am so glad you called in. I'm so excited because there's so many things to talk to. How have you been?
I've been doing well. Thanks for asking.
Well, Chris, this is Dr. Sita Gibson. Dr. Gibson, this is my friend Chris Plain.
Hi, Chris.
Hello. Hello.
I will be in listen mode.
We were just discussing the inability to the IRS of getting out of their own way. But that being said, let's jump right into some fun stuff. I can't talk tonight, Sita. Some fun stuff.
Oh, okay.
International Women's Day. Since we have a gentleman on board with us tonight, I can get both sides of this equation. I'm going to start with you, Sita. What is your take on International Women's Day?
It's a
Let me get in the bathroom, baby.
Hello?
Go ahead, Sita.
It's a way to celebrate many women of many cultures.
Is it, and I've been watching some of these women and kind of have a problem with some of the way that, and I agree, it's a way to celebrate women, but done in the right way. When they do it in a foolish way, it kind of denigrates us. Would you agree with that?
I have to disagree with that. No, well, we're talking about, I know we had International Women's Day, but when we talk about celebrating you know, twisting it around to celebrating Women's History Month, that celebrates not only women of the past, but those that are present that have had substantial victories in their lives, and they have served in government, and specifically the theme for this month is all about labor, women in labor.
And I agree that it does celebrate women in the past, women like Rosa Parks and other women that, Mother Teresa, other women that broke down barriers at a time when barriers were hard to break down. But on my social media, sometimes it was being celebrated, and I think celebrate's the wrong word. Chris, you know what I've seen, because you've seen it too. I think celebrate is the wrong word in that. I think they might have taken it and not celebrated it so much as they, what's the word? I want to say plagiarized it, for lack of a better word. They used that day instead of celebration of women who have achieved things to use it for an agenda that I don't think was right.
Can you give an example of what you're talking about, Yvonne?
Well, there were a group of them that was, they ran a protest, and I understand protest. I believe in protesting. But they were making speeches that, and I heard some of those speeches, and I'm thinking what you're doing is you're setting us back 250 years. They were not only denigrating themselves, they were denigrating our gender as a whole in their behavior and in their manner of speech. They were not being respectful of the gender. And to me, that's not being respectful of the women that had made great strides. Chris, you remember reading that and seeing some of that?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like any protest. It's like anything. You're going to have a small minority that are going to, I guess, try to hijack the cause for their own whatever agenda, whether it's political, whether it's religious, or just personal beliefs. And I did see some of that, but I've seen a lot of good out of it. I've seen, you know, it's unfortunate to me, my own personal opinion. It's kind of like Black History Month. It's said that it's regulated to one day of the year or one month of the year or one week of the year, as opposed to us just being civil human beings to each other and it being something that is appreciated and respected all year long. You know.
Can I chime in here? Let me just, so that I will tell you what my take is as it pertains. And this comes from the executive order, like you said, Chris, is mandated. Well, there was a period in time when women couldn't even vote. You know, and that's not just, African American, Native American. It was just women in general, including Caucasian women. But let me tell you what the team is for 2017. The national team is all about honoring trailblazing women in labor and business. And I'll read a small section here. It says, and this comes from the National Women's History Project, says March is designated as National Women's History Month so that we can recognize, that's the operative word, and also, Yvonne, celebrate the history of American women in schools, workplace, and communities throughout the country. So, and it also includes leaders, entrepreneurs, and innovators. During 2017, not just Women's History Month, but, you know, it's American history, so it should be celebrated throughout the entire year. Now, when I look at it, when I look back at this, you know, women didn't have the rights to vote for a very, very long time. Most women were homemakers. And men went out and did, they were the providers. Most men are the providers still, but in the role has reversed. A lot of women now are providers, and you have dual providers within a family. So it wasn't like that always. And so I think when you look back historically, there were a lot of things, and I'm going to go on the military perspective here now, where women weren't allowed to be in combat roles. However, there were a lot of women that served in combat roles. There were a lot of women that flew aircraft disguised as men during World War I and World War II. So to say that a handful of women that are doing something that's maybe protesting, is not giving a fair share of recognition to those women that have worked hard and have excelled in their craft, in their careers as entrepreneurs, as business women, as women who ran for president. And Hillary Clinton wasn't the first woman to run for president. We had others that have ran for president. Individual women who have served as general officers, women who are running corporations and CEO, that's something to celebrate, because 40, 50 years ago, it wasn't happening.
And I agree with you. That is an awful lot to celebrate. Women have been trailblazers for even before they could vote. So you know, and I think you would agree, women were trailblazers. I mean, it took a strong woman to go from the comforts of New York in the early Western days all the way across country to the West Coast.
But we could even push that back further, you know, and I don't really like to, you know, talk religion, but women were leaders in the Bible. We have books that are named after women in the Bibles. Women were
yes,
champions
ma'am, they were.
In the Bible.
Yes.
Esther.
Yep.
Esther was Esther was a hero. She was, you know, she served during biblical times to free her tribe. She
uh-huh.
did what she had to free her tribe in biblical
times. And Deborah
times.
Was a judge.
Deborah
was a
judge.
Yes.
Deborah was a judge, you know. And then you had many other Ruth. Ruth did some championing also. You had women that were the first in the Bible. You know, we had Eve. She was the first. You know, the garden, the first garden was managed by a woman, which was Eve.
That's true. That is very true.
Okay.
I guess my whole...
That had to take care of that garden. And today I actually went to a leadership summit today where we discussed, we touched on that about women being servant leaders. And this all ties in with Women History Month. We are going to be leaders not only in our communities, but we have leaders first in our homes. So we need to celebrate in our homes first. Because if you can't lead in your home, you can't really lead in your community. You have to be able to lead.
Amen. I'm sincere in that because, Chris, and I think you will agree with us from a man's perspective, a woman is the strongest of a relationship in many different ways. And there's an old adage, behind every successful man, there is a woman. And I agree with that. How do you feel about it?
Well, I agree totally. I think even in a bigger picture, you know, that everything starts at the home base. And whether it's the traditional nuclear family or whether it's the household that's led by a single woman or whatever, you know, every child, what they learn, what they take forward in life to become a leader, to become a contributing member of society starts with that parenting, that what they learn from, you know, home. And it's very true. You know, if you can't lead your home, if you can't teach your children, if you can't teach that, then you can't take it forward and teach in your community. You can't lead your community if you can't lead the very thing.
Right. Women socially are called nurturers, and we are nurturers. We always try to, we're going to save the family one way, or we're going to provide for the family one way, or we are going to serve in our community, you know. And all of that is outlined in Proverbs 30, you know, it tells what some of the responsibilities of a woman is. However, you know, God did put Adam here for, and the woman is supposed to be a helpmeet. But most of the times now, in this 21st century, it has shifted a little bit. You can't say it's 50-50. Into, you know, when we talk relationships, and I do speak on relationships, I've been married now for almost 30 years, August will be 30 years, and I can't say it's 50-50 in my house. You can't say that. It has to be 100% and 100%. If you just bring in 50 and 50, Now, that's not a healthy relationship. It should be 100%, and that's what everybody has to give 100% or more. You know, that's like giving half of your heart. You know, I'm only going to give you 50% of my heart, and, you know, what are you going to do with the other 50%? So
put it in cold storage.
Today in the 21st century, you know, when I speak on relationships, I say it's not a 50-50, and you can hear a whole lot of the big theologists and leaders tell you that, too, that have strong women or strong men in their home, and it exemplifies in the relationships that they have at home. So it's not 50-50 anymore, Chris and Yvonne. I believe my philosophy, it's 100% on 100%. You know, that's
well,
having a
home. Well, it has
to be.
It absolutely has to be. Because it's like you say, if you're...
That 50-50 is an old saying that is not a first century.
Because if you only give 50%, what is the other 50%? Is it in cold storage? Is it out to lunch? Where is it? It's like putting 50% of your effort into your job. That only means that the job is getting half of your work ability.
Exactly.
And I go back to, and sadly, I go back to the women that have lost that insight into how powerful they really are, and they don't have to, I'm going to use the word misbehave for lack of a better word. They don't have to show how weak they are by some of the things they've said and done in order to let the world know how strong they are, because women by design, and Chris, I think you would agree or maybe not, that women by design and the world by design understand that women can be and are some of the strongest creatures around. I mean, for crying out loud, we have children and multitask and carry the weight of the world on our shoulders some days.
I agree. I mean, I think, you know, it's, again, it's like a lot of things in life, you know. I think a lot of it that we see is media induced, and it's blown out of proportion, and, you know, it's very easy to get the wrong idea because you can go on the internet and, you know, simply by viewing Facebook, you can see World Star and all these places where you see, you know, people misbehaving and doing outrageous things. And then, you know, you have people who get that impression that women are out here acting wild, or they're just being crazy. And it's, again, it's,
well,
it's that very
I want
small.
When we say women, you're talking about, you're probably talking about less than a half a percent of the women that you have seen. But I have, you know, I know that everybody misbehaves, or they have a decorum that's not acceptable to everyone. However, we shouldn't just make that a blanket statement that it's women, all women. Or,
No. I don't mean...
Those few that don't have a professional decorum, we shouldn't brand the rest of the world, you know, for that. Because I think women are some of the most intelligent creatures that we have, you know, here.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm saying. It's very easy to get caught up in that it is that very, very small percentage. And, you know, it isn't the whole. It's, you know, it is only that small percentage, and you have to look past that and realize that it's a very minute thing. But, you know, the media takes it, and the media puts it on Fox News. They put it on MSC, and they blow it up into this giant thing. And then you have TMZ, and you have all of these places that are just magnifying that small little thing into gigantic proportions, and they turn it into viral videos. And it really is just preposterous because.
Oh, I don't. I probably don't look at that type of stuff. That's not in my. I don't look at all of that, but maybe that's it. And see, that's why we have to be careful about the stereotypes we have on women of different cultures, ethnicities, religious class, and professions. We have to look. We have to really be careful how we stereotype women based on the action of a few. You know, because sometimes that's what happened, you know, and it's not right.
I agree.
Since we're talking about women are our trailblazers, I had the distinct pleasure and honor of sharing the stage one time with Lily Ledbetter, and if it wasn't for her, she was the one that started a movement for equal pay. And if it wasn't for her, they said we get 70, most women get 70 percent on the dollar compared to men that get a full dollar. Well, if it wasn't for her, we may not have had that 70%. She had no idea that she would be an advocate for equal pay when she was young. And that's why we have the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act now, which redefines the restrictions on filing discrimination cases based on equal pay and our civil rights.
On this same vein that we're going, I was raised old school. I was raised in the Deep South, and I was raised old school. And from the time I was a toddler, I was taught that in order for a woman to be accepted as successful and as a professional, she had to dress the part. In other words, if you work in an office, unless it's an office where the dress is blue jeans and T-shirts because it's maybe a garage or something. But if you're in a high-level professional position, one should always dress professionally, because when you dress professionally, you feel successful, you look successful, you become successful, and you get the respect of your profession. Sita, would you agree to that, or would you expand on that?
Well, I agree to that because I think we are both part of the baby boomers generation, and that was the timeline. And I always tell people, a professional and people that have solid core values will not stray far from their core values. You know, my parents taught us how to dress professional. I think I still maintain a professional decorum. However, this is a different generation, 21st century generation. It's like saying, okay, we're going to bring the porta potty and the outhouse up to the 21st century and put it in a mansion. It's not going to work. This generation, the millennials, they have a different mindset. They may dress different to us. And I know someone had brought up the point that, oh, these young kids are doing a lot of body piercing. Well, if I remember back in the 70s, I never body pierced and I don't have a tattoo. But I remember back in the 70s, that's what was going on. And, you know, and I'm quoting the hippies, you know, we were wearing, you know, rings in our nose and, you know, and our thumbs, just what they're doing now. And some of us wear big afros, and, you know, some of us wear hair long all the way down to wherever. And it's just, you just have to go with the times. We can't bring a porta potty into the 21st century. We can't just take some stuff from the 18th century and the 19th century and say we need to bring this forward but leave the rest behind. You know, it has to move with the generations, and it's great that in the workforce, you know, I tell people when you're doing team building, put a millennial with a baby boomer, because they both can teach each other different things, not only how to dress, but they can teach them about technology and so forth. So I understand what you're saying, and, you know, those of us that are baby boomers, yeah, we're going to take the professional role all the way up. But what's professional, a professional decorum or professional dress or professional behavior for one century is not going to transition all the way to the other century to pass on to a generation, because they have cultivated their values, their beliefs, and what they think is right for them.
Well, Chris, let me ask you this. I was in the state attorney's office several years ago on a case, and I was in an elevator with this young woman, beautiful young woman. She was tall, she was stunning. And she had on a skirt that was more suited for the disco, and she had on a vest with no blouse. It was just the vest. She was going up to speak to one of the assistant state attorneys. I thought that she was a client. She was a public defender. Now, in my profession, I can't see getting in front of a judge dressed that way, representing a client. You how would you feel about it?
I was brought up much like you. I was brought up by grandparents who were very old-fashioned, and we were taught to always dress according to the situation. You know, if we were doing farm work, you wore your old clothes. You know, if you were going to church or you were going to court or to a funeral, you dressed the appropriate way. So, I mean, it's really a situation where I would probably internally think it was inappropriate, but again, it's not really my place to say, because I'm not the one who has to deal with the consequences or the repercussions, I guess, per se, of what somebody else may think. It's not, I mean, we're always going to have our opinions about other people, what we think is right. But, I mean, sometimes it's easier to say, like you hear me say a lot, you know, not my monkeys, not my circus. but sometimes it's not as easy to say that. And it's not as easy to keep our opinions to ourselves, and it's something I struggle with, but I try.
All right.
Let me ask you
the same question.
What I would have done, I don't know what your role was in the courtroom at that time, but some people don't know that they don't know. And maybe she needed a mentor, a coach, or someone to pull her aside. And I know as a supervisor, as an executive, I always tell my employees, male or female, dress for the next level.
Yes.
Exactly.
Dress for your next level. If you're going to be a stripper and you want to be a stripper, well, dress like that, but not in my office. And that's
the thing.
You can't tell people how to dress. You can't really tell people how to dress and come to work. However, if they're around professionals, they will change their behavior. And if they get a coach, or if they get a mentor or a sponsor that would pull them aside and say, hey, you know, you're not going to go very far, you know, with that office attire. And even when you go higher, I tell people, when you move to an executive level, sometimes the clothes you wear when you were staff horizontally doesn't work when you go up vertically. You have to change. You have to invest. I told folks I had one suit at a point in my life, and I had 7 shirts. And I, you know, people thought I had a lot of clothes, but I just had different shirts. But I looked professional every time I went to work. I wore stockings at the time. Even now, I have a lady at my church. She said, "I never want to see you wear a suit without stockings." A person that wears a very expensive suit or a suit, period, should always be finished by wearing stockings. And in Florida, it's too hot to wear stockings, really.
But but she's right. In order to look polished.
Yeah, my grandmother used to say that. You got to wear stockings. Stockings is a finish, and gloves. But, you know, nobody wears gloves here, you know, so unless they're having a tea.
That's the way my grandfather was with a belt.
You
weren't fully dressed unless you had a belt on.
Right. And if a man,
my dad would say,
if a man wore a suit, he wore a tie, unless it was a sports jacket, because it was polished. It gave him that air of professionalism, respect, and self-confidence and success. He might be poor as a church mouse, and the cuffs of his shirt might be frayed, but if he had on that suit and he had on that tie and he had on that belt and his shoes were polished, he was successful.
Right. But I think it's our responsibility, and we're talking about Women's History Month, I know, and women, and you know, and also men, really. It's not exclusively for women. I think it's our responsibility, those of us that have climbed up the career ladder or are in the leadership positions as leaders, to reach back and help those individuals, mentor, coach, teach, inspire, show them, be the role model. Sometimes they're trying to mimic what they see in the workforce, and it's not good.
Yeah. I know I had a...
Go ahead, Chris.
Do what? I had a couple of times when I was the manager of an Arby's that I had, you know, younger... I don't want to say kids, but young adults, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-olds, they would come in and they would fill applications out and, you know, completely dressed inappropriately. Pants, you know, halfway down and hat on sideways and, you know, just reeking of, you know, cigarette smoke. And, you know, they'd bring their application up and they'd want an interview. And I would tell them, quite frankly, and I'd be very nice about it, but I'd tell them, I will take your application, I will put it in the office, and I'm more than willing to interview you when you come back dressed appropriately for the position. And, you know, a couple of them said, "Well, what do you mean?" And I was like, "Look, this is a, you know, it is a fast food restaurant, but it's still a business, and you represent this business. So come back when your pants are pulled up, you have on a belt and a clean shirt, and you smell the way you would want the other people working around you to smell." And, you know, it kind of takes them back, or takes them aback a little bit, in the sense that, you know, you're not trying to be offensive to them, but it's kind of letting them know that, look, there's you know, like what she said, you know, they're mimicking what they see around them. And there's a time and a place for that. But there's a time and a place also where, you know, they need to know that, look, you're trying to enter the workforce, and that's not appropriate for this. And, you know, again, you have to.
It's all, you know, Chris, it's all good to say that. However, you know, it depends. For me, right, what I call my dress down might be my dress up for somebody. And what I call my dress up in the workplace may be, so some people may think it's overkill. So we can't put our values unless you have a policy, and your policy can say, you know, wear ABC. That's why most establishments have uniforms. Therefore, everyone looking alike. I grew up in the islands, in the Virgin Islands, and I went to parochial school and I went to public schools. And every school in the island had uniforms. We all had the same blouse, the same skirt, you know, the only difference, and most of us had the same bobby socks. And I would say 50% of us had the penny loafers. And the only thing that distinguished us, it would be our shoes. You know, you would wear, you know, you might have a shoe with a strap on it versus having the penny loafers. But that's part of the, you know, that's part of why I say we have to be careful in, as a society, in putting our values and beliefs on others because of the way we were brought up. We have to look at what the society is saying now, what the generation looks like now, and then, you know, mentor them for the position, coach them for the position, teach them, instead of just bashing them and saying, okay, well, you know, and I'm not saying you bash them, but I've seen a lot of people do this. They always say, well, hey, you're not going to get the job because I don't like how you look. Well, you know,
that's not
right there, you know. That's like saying too fat position, or you're too skinny for the position. You know, it's a lot of things that you could say. And in most places, they tell you, in most organizations, you can't really wear perfume or aftershave because a lot of people are allergic to that. You know, you work in a, if you work in a cubicle area where a lot of people, you know, you could tell. I used to be able to tell when one lady came to work just by following her.
Right.
And a lot of people, we had to tell her she couldn't wear that. I mean, but, it, you know, because it was offensive to others. So sometimes, you know, we have to be careful about how we approach people without a policy and procedure that's in place. And that's the best way to have it, a policy and procedure that's in place for everyone.
Well, right, and that's what I'm saying is, you know, is there was that standard of, you know, this is what I expect as a manager for every one of my employees. And one of the kids came back a day later, and he was dressed up, and I hired him on the spot, and he actually ended up being one of my very best employees. He was a wonderful, you know, young adult, 19 years old, who had just basically, you know, he was kind of just going with the flow, and he hadn't ever been taught how to dress appropriately for an interview, or he hadn't been taught interview skills or anything, really. He, you know, had a single mother who worked a lot of hours, and, you know, and then I had the chance to teach him a lot of that and work with him, and,
that's,
you know,
great.
I loved the time that I got to work with him because he really, like I said, turned out to be a wonderful, wonderful employee. So,
and that brings me to another point that we can discuss, and that is when we do mentor, I can't talk anymore, when we do mentor someone, when we do, as you say, Sita, take them off to the side and say, you might be best served if, or some other form of opening the conversation, we empower them with life skills that they can carry with them forever, because we took that moment to say, hey, if you do this, this will help you do this. Would that be a fair statement?
I think that's a fair statement, you know, depending on the context it's used in. And, you know, there's so many places now. They have churches. They have the workforce, Brevard workforce. They have so many nonprofits now that do that Dress for Success. We shouldn't really have that problem in any of our communities. We shouldn't have that as a major problem because there's so many free classes and free workshops and those type of things for job hiring, the skill sets, on-the-job training. So it's up to, you know, it's up to the kids nowadays, the young adults, that's what I want to say, the young adults and the parents. And sometimes the parents always think it's up to the school to do it, you know. Well, the parents have to responsibility too. But in our generation, I say in my generation, and I don't know, Chris, your generation, but I know that Yvonne is in Boomer's generation as well, we had a responsibility. My parents had a responsibility for the whole community, just about everybody in the street, because we had, you could whoop somebody else's kid. You know, you could feed somebody else's kid. Somebody else's kid could get over to your house with permission from the parents. And if you was doing something wrong, you know, the extended family, that's everybody in the community, would take care of that, then tell your parents. But nowadays, you can't really do that. You know, the parents might fight you or beat you or shoot you or something. I don't know, but I don't step in that arena. But
I had more parents than the law should allow. It should have been criminal, the parents had. And they didn't mind telling me either.
like some of us say when we are just talking about, you know, what, you know, for our upbringing, we say, man, that was child abuse back then. We didn't know that. You know, even now, you try to discipline your child. Some people don't discipline the children because they're scared that the child is going to say, you know, go to the teacher and say, well, my mom spanked me, you know, and they tell them about the social workers and stuff like that in school at a young age. So maybe that's why we're having some of the challenges, not from a whole lot, but just a few in our communities, you know.
And that you could be very, very right, Sita, because maybe the parent is afraid to be a parent, and part of being a parent is discipline. We're disciplined all the time. Even as adults, we're disciplined. We're disciplined in our job. We're disciplined in our relationships. We discipline ourselves if we're halfway smart. And I think people are afraid of that word because they take it and put it in the wrong context.
Exactly. And not only that, we have children that are parenting.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a child and you're raising a child, you're growing up at the same time. You know, it's a child.
And that's not fair to that child, because every child deserves to be a child, because that's part of the growth process. At 10 years old, you shouldn't have to raise a sibling that's a year younger or 2 years younger or 5 years younger than you are.
Exactly. But, you know, getting back to Women's History Month, you know, we're talking about strong women. I know that, you know, back in the days, women had, a lot of women had, you know, 10, 15, 20 kids, you know, and they had them because they had farms to take care of, and that's why they had all those kids. However, most of those women that had those 10, 15, 19 kids, they lived to be in their 90s.
Yeah.
That's true. They did. Because they were strong-minded, strong-willed women.
They worked hard. Nowadays, everybody wants to be a millionaire overnight. They don't want to do the work to get to the next level. They just want to get it. And I used to say this, you know, I know there's a lot going around, and I'm not going to really elaborate on what's going around with the posting of pictures of military women, but I always used to tell my soldiers at the time, it's easier to do the work and work up than to stay on your back, because your back is going to give up one time and then you're not going to move up eventually. You know, so I always try to tell people, do the work. It may take a little bit longer, but you will last.
Absolutely. And you'll have your own self-respect and your own self-confidence and your own feeling of self-success when you do the work.
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely.
And you always respect something more when you've got your own blood and sweat and equity, sort of, sweat equity.
I have to you that when you invest in yourself, I tell people the best thing they can do is invest in themselves, because when you invest in yourself, you appreciate it more, you value it more, and you know, it's something that you're proud of. You know, you know it's just something that you're proud of when you invest in yourself, and when you, not only in yourself, you have to invest in others. You have, it's a must. It's a must. You have to invest in others.
It's almost 9 o'clock.
And I think that's one of the reasons I do this show, Sita, because it's not only an investment in myself and my success, but I get to invest in all of y'all, and I get this diverse, well-rounded dialogue from people, and I learn so much from you and from Chris and from my other guests. I learn a lot, and I so appreciate you.
And we appreciate you more, Yvonne. You are just, I mean, this is just awesome. It's an awesome way of reaching out to people all over, because this station goes nationwide. And
international.
Internationally, too.
Let me just read.
Empowering others, you know, it's awesome.
Let me just read how international we are, Miss Sita, because we are touching women all over the world, literally all over the world. We are heard in Canada, Germany, Korea, Egypt, Ecuador, the UK, Russian Federation, Indonesia, Singapore, Australia, Ireland, Croatia, Tunisia, New Zealand, Taiwan, Brazil, Pakistan, India, Nigeria, Saudi Arabia, Portugal, Hungary, Bulgaria, Norway, the Ukraine, Vietnam, Finland, Sweden, Peru, France, the Philippines, Argentina, Mexico, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo.
Wow.
Also in Croatia. We are heard in 40 countries.
That is absolutely amazing.
That was one reason that I wanted to talk about the International Women's Month, Day, whatever they're celebrating. I celebrate women all the time because I am one and I'm proud to be one, and I shout it loud and clear, and Chris can tell you I don't mind telling people I'm a woman and I'm proud of my gender and myself. But if we can touch one woman's life, whether she's young, whether she's middle-aged, whether she's older, whether she has children or just starting out or in the middle of deciding a career change, if tonight's show touches one woman's life to fulfill a dream, Sita, we will have succeeded in ways that are phenomenal.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And that is why I wanted to talk about women being proud of who they are, of maintaining self-respect and a professional attitude, a professional dress. If one lives in India and the professional dress is the saris and the jewelry, that is the professional dress of the country and of that day. If one lives
right.
in America and the professional dress is suits in a courtroom, that is what one should wear, not walking in look like she just came off the street, because it does
exactly.
not lend any credence to her professionalism and her credibility. Pakistan the same way. Whatever the professional dress a woman should wear in her country to succeed, that is the way she should dress. And that was the point I wanted to make, is that wherever one is, to succeed, we have to dress for success. Would that be it?
We have to dress for success, right, absolutely.
And would y'all believe that we're almost done here? Our hour's almost up.
Really?
Yeah.
And, you know, let me say this, since we're talking about professional dress. you know that a lot of people think that when you become an executive or you're at the top of the CEO, you could dress any kind of way. But I tell them, and there is such a thing as an appearance coach. An appearance coach is one that will train you what to wear at the level that you're at, as an executive, as a CEO, as a president, as the board of directors. And they will not only help you by telling you what to wear and how much makeup and the type of clothes, but they will help you also style your wardrobe for your next level or for the level that you're at. So, you know, if you're out there in this international base and you're having problems trying to find something to wear, get an appearance coach. An appearance coach don't have to actually be a professional. It could be somebody that you pull aside that you like how they dress professionally and ask them to be your coach.
And that's perfect because and that person needs to be honest. Don't just give lip service. If it looks like crap, say, no, that's not quite you. Maybe let's do something else, because you're not doing that person any favors by mollycoddling them or just giving lip service. In fact, you're insulting their intelligence.
Right, right. And for International Day, the theme for International Day was Be Bold for Change. You know, that was the theme. I remember that. So, you know, international, we have to be bold. You know, we have to be bold in the way we dress. We have to be bold in the way we lead. We have to be bold on the way to the top.
And the way we behave.
And the way we behave, our professional decorum.
Exactly. Well, we are down to the two-minute mark. Sita, thank you, my friend, so much for calling in. I am so glad you called in and made it, because I felt like this show of all shows needed to be done, because, like I said, we're an international show now. And if we can touch one woman, and she succeeds, and she, at whatever job it is, if it's a weaver, if it's a mother, if it's a lawyer, if it's an Indian chief, whatever profession it is, when she succeeds, I hope we had a hand in it.
Oh, thank you for having me, Yvonne. You know, and Chris, it was nice meeting you, hearing you. One day I'll get to meet you. And be blessed, everybody that's out there. And thanks again for the opportunity to serve.
And thank you for the opportunity to allow me to serve, and as having you as my guest, as an outlet to education. Chris, would you say that's a fair statement?
Absolutely. I learned a lot. I mean,
I learned a lot.
You know me, I learned.
Well,
I always like to hear the men's perspective. So thank you, Chris.
Well, you took the words right out of my mouth, Sita. There you are, in my head again. I love it. So, ladies and gentlemen... I'll be right back with you, Chris. Ladies and gentlemen, on Wednesday night, the 22nd, author Paul Hurd, a.k.a. Thomas F. Mulvey, will be with me. On Thursday, my ad man, Christopher Dunham, will be here. Chris, you know you want to be there for that one. And on Friday, filmmaker Allison Knight will be here. On Saturday night, I'm taking the night off. Chris, thank you so much, my friend, for coming on and being my co-host. It's always fun when you're with me.
I try to be.
ladies and gentlemen, we have talked about professionalism. We have talked about dreams. We have talked about lasting impressions. You cannot make a second good first impression. If you don't make a good impression the first time around, you can bet your bottom dollar that you will not get a second chance, and you never want to miss an opportunity. So on top of dreams coming true tonight, I'm going to tell you, when you go out into the world, whether it's to the local McDonald's to apply for a job, whether it's to the local law enforcement to apply for a job, whether it's to the local drugstore to apply for a job, dress for success. Because when you dress for success, you will be successful. You will feel better about yourself. You will feel confident. You will feel self-assured. You will walk in there with the attitude, this job is mine. What, can I get a yes, Ellery?
Yes, yes, yes.
So until Wednesday night, this is Off the Chain with my co-host Chris Plain and my guest Sita Gibson saying good night.
Good night.
Thank you both so much for spending an hour with me. I am so humbled and appreciative, and I know people get tired of hearing me say that, but I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
Awesome. I just wanted to say to Sita real quick, it was kind of cool to hear you were from the Virgin Islands. I have an uncle who works for National Geographic, and he's a scuba professional, and he actually owns resorts in both Jamaica and the Grand Caymans.
St. Thomas and St. John is the island for scuba divers. I mean, crystal clear water. Yes.
Yeah,
good.
That's why when you said that, I was kind of like, hey, I know that area.
I'm going to let you two lovely people go. And Sita, I'm sorry I missed you when I was up in Cocoa the other week. I would have loved to have hugged your neck.
I'm going to come your way one day, lunch will be on me.
I'll cook you some southern lunch, honey. I'll cook you some homemade biscuits.
Okay.
And you come to my house, you eat.
I know you're still recording, so I don't want you to have to edit too much. So I'm going to hang up and call you.
All right, I will talk to y'all later, and Sita, I'm going to bring you back. So until we talk again, I'll say good evening to both of you.
Good evening,
right.
And God bless both of you. Bye-bye.
Good evening. Bye-bye.
All right, night.
Thank
night
you, Chris.
Bye.
Good night.